All right, we'll go ahead and get started. Thank you all for coming. In this session, we really want to talk to you about, you know, why you as an IT pro and should care about application management. And I know as the conference has gone on, you've been introduced to a lot of new capabilities that System Center is providing. And one of those main pillars is really around applications, how we configure, deploy applications, how we can monitor applications. Really what we want to do in this session, let me first introduce myself. My name is Chris Childers. I work in the engineering team around solutions. Joining me is Sean Gibbs. In our group, that's our focus area, is around application management. We came to Microsoft, for those that are familiar with the acquisition of Avicode, we came to Microsoft through that acquisition. So we have a lot of experience, a lot of years on working with customers around this concept of optimizing applications, monitoring applications. So really in this session, what we want to do is jump into the concepts that I'm sure you've been introduced to throughout the week, but go a little deeper on them and embellish that conversation with some practical stories that we've learned and things that we've seen in the market that you should consider and how you should approach those so that you can maximize some of the new capabilities that we have around managing applications. So let's just jump in and frame this conversation. And I think this is familiar to all of us. And you might be wondering, you know, why do we even have development up there? Because, you know, we're having an IT-related conversation. When we talk about applications and an application management, the conversation starts to shift from traditional IT-related conversations. No longer are we just talking about infrastructure, fabric, et cetera. All of a sudden, we have this collaborative effort, hopefully, with the application teams. If you look at the life cycle of application development, of course, we go all the way through the traditional requirements process, development, testing, and out into production. And there's friction points along this continuum, right? On the development side, there's always challenges around how do I get actionable information from my production system, from IT, so I can understand where a problem is, right? And how do I leverage that? The classic challenge that I'm sure everyone in the room has experienced of, yeah, server looks great, but the application's running slowly. How do we deal with that? All the way through to release management. That's typically another friction point, both on the development side as well as on the IT production side, right? How do we do that handoff? And what's the process to go through to actually release an application into production? And at least my experience is that's where we can run into issues, right? Pre-production environments don't match production environments, or we're doing manual setup along the way, and there's change management issues. So we'll talk about, as the conversation goes on, how we may be able to optimize this. And then, of course, on the operational monitoring side of the equation, again, from an IT perspective, how do we have a level of visibility inside the application? What does that look like? Okay. That's typically been a challenge for most organizations. You know, we understand the virtualized environment, we understand the host, et cetera. How do we move up the stack? So I know you've all seen this slide before, right? One of the key pillars, and it's been talked about throughout the week, is really around introducing this concept of application management into this private cloud story. And when we say that, what it really comprises is our ability to help you through the process of taking an application from, you know, test, from production or pre-production, and how do you effectively, in a standardized way, introduce that into your production environment, provision it, give users access to it, and then ultimately monitor that application. Especially in a private cloud scenario, as we move to that, it becomes incredibly important that, number one, we have a standardized way to deploy applications, and we have a standardized way to monitor the application environment itself. That's really the goal. Without those, we can't get the levels of efficiencies that we're really looking for in this private cloud model. Okay. So I'm going to focus on the configuration side of this and the deployment side. Sean's going to focus on monitoring and management, so we'll break it up that way. And for the rest of the conversation, I'm going to focus on really two capabilities that I want to go a little bit deeper with and that is around this concept of service templates. I want to go a little bit deeper than hopefully you've seen this week and show you some of the mechanics and how it works and how to think about it and how it can save you time and energy. And who should you engage in the organization to make this happen? Because it's not potentially just an IT conversation. In the System Center 2012 stack, what this means, this service template concept, is we have this application specification. It's actually quite a powerful paradigm because when you jump into the service templates, what you're doing is you're saying, here's the application I want to deploy, but here's the underlying host infrastructure that I need or networking. So it actually comprises a complete package of what the application should look like. Right? And we'll jump into more detail on that. And of course, we get tremendous efficiency once we do that. Now, here's some practical advice, right? Not every application in your organization is probably going to go to this model, right? You have to take into consideration how often am I releasing this application? How important is this application? You have to make some decisions about where to invest your energy in going to this model. But for those applications that are really key applications or maybe ones that you're doing a monthly deployment cycle and that eats up, you know, a lot of cycles from both the development and IT side, those are things to consider. Moving to this model, making the investment of going to this standardized approach, of course, gains you long-term efficiency. Also, what it does is gives us the ability to provision this really at any given time. The other interesting thing is it's not just a production conversation, right? We can have a scenario if we integrate this with the development process where we're actually provisioning applications in pre-production. So maybe test takes a version of this model and they say, I'm going to deploy it to the test cloud. And in production, we're going to take that same model and deploy it to the production cloud. Okay? So now we have consistency across this application continuum. So the way service templates work is, again, we can model out tiers of an application. Now, in System Center 2012, we have really, I'll say, four classes of applications that you can configure and deploy. Web-based applications, and we use WebDeploy as the primary package for that. Server at V applications, which I'm going to take you through some server at V examples. SQL applications, and then the third is really any other thing that you want to deploy through custom scripts. So we model out the tiers of the application. We model out what are the requirements around that? What are the configurable parameters, right? Every time we deploy a web tier, probably we have some configuration changes. For example, what's the database connection string, right? And those are things that we're going to have to model out, and when we create an instance of this application, provide that information. And of course, we have the operating system that this is going to run on. Okay, so we can define, here's the OS, here's the memory requirements, et cetera. So let's actually jump into an example here and go a little bit deeper on service templates. So you may have seen this already. Here we have the stock trader application. So it's in this case, I have a front-end tier, two middle-tier servers, and a SQL tier. So the first thing I want to show you is if you actually are modeling an application in service templates, again, you define the hardware requirements, the operating system requirements, but you get down to this application configuration, and you'll notice here's a web application. So the first comment I'd make here is there's a deployment model that we have in service templates of how we deploy web applications, and that's using WebDeploy. That's important because from an IT perspective, if you're looking at service templates, my guess is you're going to have a conversation with the development organization to say, listen, we can gain tremendous efficiency going to this new paradigm, but it may take some rework, right, in the way we package our application so we can take advantage of this standardization. Capabilities you have in here is in a whole eventing model in service templates. And what I mean by that is the sequence of events is I instantiate an instance of the application, of the server. And then we have an event model that says we can run some custom scripts beforehand, we can deploy the application, and we can run some custom scripts after. So whatever you need to do to actually deploy that application and any other configuration along the way, you can model it out through custom scripts. The other thing that you can do in this model, and is very important, is how do we service this application? We can define those rules. Meaning, when I deploy this StockTrader application, I have a three-tier application, web front end, middle tier, and database tier. How am I actually going to deploy this application? So what we have are these concepts of things like deployment order and servicing order. And so it's basically a sequence, right? Deployment order says we're going to deploy web tier first, middle tier second, SQL third, right, and execute scripts along the way to wire up this application. Servicing order is the same thing, but we'll get into an example of how we can actually deploy this and update this, of how we want to actually update it. From an IT perspective, when we roll out an application, we have a sequence of events that we do. So for example, let's say we have an application in production and it has 10 load balanced front end web servers. How do we actually want to sequence the upgrade process when vnext comes of that application? So we can define a servicing order and an upgrade domain that says, for example, in upgrade domains, let's say we have 10 front end servers. If I had a value of 2 for upgrade domains, Virtual Machine Manager will actually take down 5 instances, apply the upgrade, bring them back up, et cetera, et cetera. The point here is that you can actually model this information out in this service template and define how this should be scaled out, how this should be serviced. And the servicing process is really two parts. It's servicing the application and servicing the underlying operating system, but it works the same way. So once we've modeled this out, we can go through the deployment process. So we can configure deployment and actually deploy it into our cloud. Now, I would say, obviously, I'm going to walk you through some of the manual steps to actually deploy and upgrade a service template. But this is a scenario where Orchestrator can be quite powerful here. So once you have these service templates defined, you can leverage Orchestrator to run PowerShell and provision this automatically. A scenario that can be quite powerful there is, for example, let's say in your environment you're not running SQL Server. Let's say you're running Oracle. Right now there isn't an Oracle sort of instance class in service templates. So how would you approach that in this scenario? Well, my recommendation would be leverage Orchestrator, build the automation, leverage the service template, and leverage Orchestrator to do other things in the process that you need, for example, updating Oracle or whatever you need on the Oracle side. Okay. So we deploy this, and what we get is an instance of the StockTrader service. Now, the cool thing from an administration point of view is now we actually have deep visibility of not just the virtualized instance of this application, but what's deployed in it. So, for example, you can see in my middle tier, I can actually see what's deployed in that guest OS and how it's configured right there. So kind of my change management things right there. So let's say version 2 comes along of this application. Again, once we've leveraged this standardized model, I can simply do a copy of version 1, which is what I've done. Here is version 2, and I go into that model and make my changes. From there, again, you can update this either manually or through Orchestrator and PowerShell. So I'll do that here. Okay. So here's version 1 that I'm running here. We'll see how long this takes. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time. And you'll see that we're prompted, okay, in this case, to say, here's all the settings that we need to configure. You'll see, username, password, database connection, string values, et cetera. Hopefully it'll come back. There we go. And then we can define how we actually want to apply updates. Okay? Do I want to apply these updates to the existing VMs, or do I want to create new VMs as a part of this upgrade process? This last part, and I'll just touch on this because it may not be evident by default, and that is you'll get a warning that says, do you want to apply these changes immediately? Most production systems, obviously you're going to have a schedule that you follow. So the way this works is if we don't deploy it immediately, which would probably be the default scenario, but I'll choose it in this case. Again, here's a place where Orchestrator comes in, because you can either use your own schedule and model that in Orchestrator, or you can, Virtual Machine Manager has a concept of scheduling and calendar. So best practice here would be leverage Orchestrator, create a workflow, and define how you actually want to kick off either a provision of an application or an update of the application. Okay? And then, of course, got some sort of issue here, but again, we can see that. You can see I failed for some reason. Have to take a look at it, and we can roll that back. So in my case, since it failed, I can actually go back in and say, you know what? We need to roll back to version 1. The point here is that it's all automated for you. Now, let's switch over here. Do these look familiar? When we're deploying applications, I've been in this game for a lot of years, and I can tell you I've gone through a lot of 146-page manual install guides. So in the application world, this is pretty typical, right? The development teams hands us some sort of package and says, here's the instructions for deploying it. Go do it. And hopefully it's as, you know, there's some automation in there. The other scenario that we commonly see is when we move from dev to test to production, there's inevitably seems to be changes, whether they're environmental changes because we don't have the same infrastructure, or because we have this 146-page manual, we make change management mistakes along the way, but that's quite common. The other scenario that I'm sure you're all keenly aware of is what happens when you have a new master image of your application. You apply SP1 to your gold image. Typically, in most enterprise environments, you have to go through a recertification process for the applications. Okay, so these are some of the challenges that Server App V can help with. How many people are familiar with Server App V? Just a few. Okay, good. So how many people are familiar with App V? Few more hands. Okay. So it's the same concept. So for those that are familiar with App V, it's the same concept. Server App V gives us virtualization of the application layer, just like App V does on the client side. This, in my opinion, is a real game changer when deploying applications. And the reason I say that is think of what we're going through on the virtualization side, where we've come so far, right? Most everyone is either moved over to a virtualized environment. That's our common paradigm now. I say it's a game changer because now we're moving up the stack. We're taking that same paradigm and we're applying it to applications. We're virtualizing applications, and essentially what that does is gives us an abstraction away from the operating system. What that means to you from an IT perspective is much easier deployment scenarios and being able to, in a modular fashion, take an application package and deploy it into guest operating systems and bypass that 146-page manual and have much less dependency on OS versions. Okay. So Server App V, for those that aren't familiar, comes packaged in Virtual Machine Manager. And I'm going to show you Server App V, even if you don't take advantage of Virtual Machine Manager today, it's important to note that Server App V comes bundled in there, but you can use it independently. And it's really a two-tier architecture, so we have what we call a sequencer, and I'll show you that briefly. We sequence the application, and essentially think of it as we sequence, we're walking through that 146-page manual one time in our sort of gold-certified environment, and Server App V captures the change to the environment, which is our implementation of the application. From there, we have this package. And that package can then be taken to any operating system and through PowerShell commands, deploy that or take it down. from a dependency perspective, what it affords you is now every time you go to SP1, for example, of your operating system, you don't necessarily need to recertify that because server at V, as long as server at V supports the platform, the application supports the platform. Okay? And to test that out is incredibly simple, and I'll show you how simple it actually is. Okay? So let's take a look at server at V. So let's start with the sequencer. Now, this sample application that I'm going to show you is actually a PHP application running MySQL in the back end. I thought we'd mix it up a little bit here just to show you kind of the flexibility of this. Now, this is, you know, normally you'd have database tier and web tier somewhere else. For simplicity's sake, this is all bundled together just to set the stage. So what is it that I do to take advantage of server at V? So what you're going to do is take your kind of gold standard environment that you expect to deploy that application to, and you're going to walk through that series of steps to deploy the application using the sequencer. And again, the sequencer will basically listen at the environment and capture things like registry key settings, installing of services, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? And then we have a package. It'll also do another interesting thing. Let's say we have a web application that has configuration setting in it, like database connection strings. Server at V is actually smart enough, intelligent enough, to look at common config files, any INI files, web.config files, things like that, and actually watch, for example, if we go through the install process and we change database connection from foo to foo2, it'll extract that out and give you an option to parameterize that as a part of the package. So you can see in my case, here's my virtual registry, here's my virtual file system that I'm installing, here's my virtual services. You'll notice I have Apache 2.2 in MySQL. Before I forget it, just a comment here. Not every application is going to be a good candidate for server at V. Anything that has device drivers in it, not a good candidate. Anything kind of at that kernel level. But your common business productivity type of applications, absolutely. And I believe there's a session that already happened, but you can probably get access if you haven't seen it. There was a session this week on our work on virtualizing SharePoint using server at V. So once we have this package, let me just show you what it looks like in a deployed environment. So here I have a server at V environment. Okay. Looks like I'm going to... Now, I've deployed this blog application using server at V. And you'll notice that here's my blog application. Okay. And you'll notice here, if I open up services, that we'll see Apache and MySQL running. Now, what is server at V actually doing? It's faking the operating system into thinking that this application is physically installed. So if I'm installing something to IIS, it's going to show up in IIS. If I'm installing services, which it looks like it's going to take a while to come up, I'm going to see those services registered here. However, what you see is in this queue drive that we create, that entire package, that's what's been deployed to my operating system. Okay. Oh, here's services. Running slowly, I see. Okay. Nope. Apache 2.2. All right. Now, version 2 comes along of this application. Barely see it here, but I think this is the right one. So, a couple points. If you virtualize an application and you take care, you use service templates, what I'm showing you about how server at V works gets handled for you in Virtual Machine Manager. If you go the option where you want to use server at V independently of that, it's simple PowerShell commands. For example, remove this application. Now, the awesome thing, at least I think it's awesome, is this application goes away like it never existed. There was no footprint left on the operating system, right? So the only thing we see here is our Q drive is gone. Here, if we scroll back up, Apache 2.2 and MySQL are gone as well, okay? Version 2 comes along, it's the same process. And this might take a minute, right? So here's version 2, I've made some updates. I go into the sequencer, I make those updates, or the development team makes those updates, and then I deploy. The third thing I want to tell you about is another advantage of Server.v that can save you a lot of time is it will manage state for you. So the scenario is, let's imagine that the application has some sort of state and you have an OS upgrade coming, right? So you're going to rip and replace that operating system. Server.v allows you to back up the state of the application. We don't have time to go through it here, but quick PowerShell, I can say, back up and take a snapshot of everything this application is doing right now. Remove the application, switch out the OS, and restore it. So from the application's point of view, it's back to the checkpoint that it was at before you did the OS update. Okay? So again, we can see here just how quickly I've installed version 2, Apache 2.2. Right? And I go back here, and you probably wouldn't have recognized it, but you know, version 2 here, we'll get the System Center logo. Now, before I hand it off to Sean, I'll just say this. What I've gone through and shown you some of these capabilities, it's my belief in practical terms that this, to get the efficiencies that you're probably looking for in your organization, means really need to bring in these other stakeholders into the conversation, bring the development team in into this conversation. Why? Because from your perspective, you can make it even easier on yourself. You can say, listen, guys, here's all these capabilities. Wouldn't it be great if you virtualized your application right from the start in your build process and use that paradigm all the way through testing, which means that the output that you get is exactly the same thing that they started with on their side. So you really cut through a lot of the points along the process where you can introduce problems. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sean, and he'll talk about how we can, once we've gone through the deployment, how we can actually monitor and manage these applications.
Great. Thanks, Chris. So quickly, just a couple questions that'll help me out a little bit, but how many people in the audience have regular conversations with the development team? Anybody have regular meetings? That's awesome, because that's a year ago, wouldn't have been so many hands. 2 years ago, maybe no hands. So we're certainly learning some things. I think one of the reasons why this came to us as something that we found that as an IT pro you might be interested in was simply because those conversations you're having and how that kind of moves through your organization now and what you're seeing. So let's step back and look at the app lifecycle that Chris put up earlier, and let's talk a little bit about application monitoring. I just want to kind of highlight a few things. One of the things that we're learning as we go, just like Chris stated with application deployments, as IT pros, we care about a repeatable kind of model of deploying applications that allow us to remove or abstract problems from those deployments, right? To do that, we need to have those conversations with development because not all applications can be virtualized, not all applications can be created in such a way that can expand out and scale out into service templates. So we might not be able to use all the capabilities of Virtual Machine Manager unless we have those conversations with development. Well, it's kind of the same thing with application monitoring. We're not going to ask them to make a lot of changes with what they're doing and what they're deploying and what they're building, but we're going to offer them some assistance in their lifecycle as well as what our capabilities are in other parts of the lifecycle where we normally deal with it. Early on, they're testing, they're monitoring, and they're running the applications and developing in a sprint cycle or agile life cycle to where learning things about the app when it has a problem is beneficial, somewhat easy to them because they're right there going through the testing process. But when they give it out into production, this is when they now remove themselves from having that data. And as the IT pros now, we can give them that exact same data that they're looking for. So let's talk about a little bit why we should care about giving them that data, right? I mean, we are usually the first lines of defense when there are challenges with applications, and we don't always know what's going wrong with them, but we're going to look at the knowledge base we have, and we're going to understand, is it networking, is it infrastructure, operating system, where is it that these applications may be experiencing problems in my world, and if it doesn't fit in any of those stacks, we're going to give it back to them. Probably not give them a lot of information around what took place. So what we really have to do is kind of fall into three buckets. We all do this, and we all have these three buckets for just about every challenge we have. Doesn't matter if it's an application, doesn't matter if it's a network resource that's having a problem, but we have these three buckets. And the first bucket is alerting. We love to know when there's a problem, right? For many years, I used customers for my alerting, whether it was my internal IT team receiving phone calls from my internal users, or I had customers calling from the external customer-facing components. But I used them. They let me know when there was an application problem, right? We have to take that alerting now, and we have to kind of filter it into a second stage or a second bucket, triaging. How severe is the problem? Just because I have a lot of complaints doesn't mean it's really that big of an issue. It's just running a little slow. If they knew what it was doing, maybe they wouldn't complain as much, and we'll work on that if we have the data to analyze it. So now we're talking about the third bucket, which is diagnosing the problem. You know, we're usually fairly good at that for certain types of resources that we're used to, right? SQL Server, we've got DBAs, we've got resources that understand that and can help us with that. But when the application's experiencing problems, we don't always have access to the resources that developed it, built it, understand it, and can talk to us about it. And in return, we don't always give them that data back. We don't always let them know what took place, what does a customer mean when they say slow, and was it related to any other infrastructure, what was the resource utilization on the systems at that moment in time, so where was it really being impacted? So we need to collect that data to help them do that. So that's what I'm really going to show today, is how do we do those three things? How do we do those three things with applications we don't develop? Or how do we do them with applications we do develop? How do we do it with applications that aren't even Microsoft-based? So we need that information. So the first concept is really what two types of kind of alerts or notifications do we care about, right? That starts to help also with that triaging stage. So when I talk about alerts, I talk about these three buckets, there's some synergy between alerting and triaging, right? So if an application's experiencing a problem, what kind of problem is it? Is it an availability problem? It's probably somewhat more critical. So I'm already triaged into the fact that it's a little bit more interesting. If it's performance related, which is our other bucket, then maybe it's probably a little bit less critical. Every application's different. Not all applications are created equal. I'll give you an example. One of my past experiences was dealing with an application that the CFO of the organization used one time a year, tax time, and every single thing that went wrong with it or how slow it was important to us because he only did one thing in it, and if it didn't do it, we were in trouble. Take some website like Microsoft.com, millions of users, logins, access. Maybe they don't care about the individualized Chris Childers couldn't log in incident. Right? They'll let support deal with that because he probably fat thumbed his name or something. So it's a little bit less interesting when that type of incident comes up. So every application is slightly different. So we're going to work through this notion of alerting and collecting data, and more importantly, how did we go about configuring to collect that data? So the first thing is we're bringing up Operations Manager, which is where the alerts are coming into. And as the IT pros, that's typically our console of choice, which we would like to use to see what's going on with our environment. And we get these lists of alerts that are collected from the applications, highlighting whether or not the severity level's higher, whether it's a warning or it's a critical alert. And then you can see in the description that we get some awareness of what the challenge is. Right? So I know that this particular application had a failure in the shopping cart. So I already know that people can't buy stuff. It's an e-commerce site. So that's important to this particular application. So what I need to do is take that information and do something with it, right? Might not be my problem, might be somebody else's problem. And we can quickly get into the knowledge base around what this is. We already know it's critical. We've already been alerted to it. We've got information around why did Operations Manager collect it, right? So even if you configured it and somebody else is dealing with it, they have information on why did it collect it. We can create our own company knowledge. We can track some history around it. And we've got a link into a more in-depth collection of this event, right? Because I talk about alerts and events. You'll hear me use those two terms. They're different. An event is what caused the alert, right? Or a series of events. But what's interesting is this particular one I know about, I've seen, it's critical, it's a shopping cart code failure, so let me go ahead and make sure that I tell the right team members about that. So using Operations Manager and a connector into Team Foundation Server, anybody not familiar with Team Foundation Server, everybody know what that is? I can actually tell the engineering team and the development team that they have a bug. So I can switch over, say assign it to engineering. That's automatically going to go back into Team Foundation Server. Team Foundation Server is going to be able to pull it up right inside of their Visual Studio environment. So now we're talking to two different team members about the same incident, and we can even automate this process, right? So I don't even really need to talk to them if I don't want to. If we're not having those conversations, it can have them for me. They have the same context of the event that made this alert. And then they can go through their resolution process, create new builds, get those back out to me, and then we can resolve it, right? So it's very easy to now spread the knowledge base around what's going on. So how did we actually configure to make this happen? That's kind of the crux of the problem, right? How do we make that configuration happen? So let's jump back into Operations Manager real quick. And let's go into our authoring console. Operations Manager is working off of, obviously, management packs, which understand different contexts of objects and things that we care about. And the APM management pack is in particular for related to .NET. So what I'm going to do here is simply walk through creating a template that understands a .NET application and how I want to monitor it. So think about this. You create the template once. Any server that you're deploying that Operations Manager is eventually going to monitor and manage, if it has that application there, it will get monitored. So if it spreads, if it gets deployed in multiple organizations and you've got Operations Manager caring about it, it's going to get monitored and the data is going to come. So I'm going to walk through real quick, if I can get my menu context up. Selecting an application to monitor. Now, here we're simply just going to give it a name that I'm going to care about, something that I can understand. Oops. And put it into a management pack that I can care about, right? Create my own management pack specific to that particular application, how I want to deal with it. Oops.
come on, work with me. There we go. Sorry about that. So now what I need to do is actually pick the application I care about. So one of the first things that's taking place underneath the covers is we're discovering the applications that are in the environment. So we're seeing what applications are out there. We're now selecting which ones that I'm interested in setting up this template for. Adding them to the template, whatever it may be. And then suggesting that maybe I'm going to monitor maybe a test environment for them. So notifications and alerts can go someplace different. I can set different maintenance rules, different alerting rules, or I'm going to go ahead and set this for my production environment. Target a specific set. Now we're really switching over into when do I create an alert and when do I collect events? Two different things. So the first thing I have to decide is, do I want to create alerts for individual events? My CFO's running that application that's once a year, tax time he's doing. Yes, I do. Microsoft.com, maybe I don't. I don't want every individual alert or every individual event to create an alert. So if it's Microsoft.com, we're going to go ahead and say, no, I don't want to actually turn these individual events over into alerts. I want to just go ahead and collect them. I want to gather them because we're going to use them to analyze the application and understand it. And we're going to use them to trigger higher level alerts on quantities of them or percentages. So the next thing is, when is something considered slow? Right? So on a server, it should take X amount of milliseconds or X number of seconds to finish and complete. And we can go into advanced configurations and start setting at a lower level different tiers of the application or components of the applications so that we can set alerts and set different levels that we care about. For example, the shopping cart page. Right? At the high level, I don't care about individualized alerts being created for events, right? I don't care that Chris couldn't log in. I care that everybody can't log in, or I care that X percentage of the people can't log in. But when it comes to the shopping cart, which is our number one primary reason to exist for this application, I care if they have the slightest little blip. So I may go in and create a monitor for the shopping cart as part of this. So as a transaction, I can now say the shopping cart failure is interesting to me. And I can set its alerting level slightly different. I can set its awareness of or considerations to application failures slightly different. Right? Application failures to us are exceptions in the code. And I can say now I care about those as well. Or I care about all of them, whether or not the developer is dealing with them or not. So if the developer is writing code to deal with it, I still may want it for a shopping cart or for the CFO's application. If the developer of Microsoft.com is dealing with it, I probably don't want it. I only want the critical ones that bypass their error logging and error catching. So again, this is specific to what events am I going to create. These events now make up not only the detail that I can use for diagnostics, but now we'll decide on how we're going to look at them from an alerting point of view. I'm not actually going to save that advanced details. Walking through the template, real quick, scenario says, okay, this is all the summary of what I just set. I'm happy with it. I want to go ahead and turn it on. So now anywhere this application's found in those set of servers will actually get monitored. That information is going to come in, and it's going to come in as a critical alert, depending on what I said, or a normal standard warning. And I can take that information now and start diagnosing application problems. So let's look at some of the detail of what's collected. And again, from the perspective of why I should care in the IT pro side, this information is helpful to the IT pros to a degree, because you're being told how severe it is, you're being told what the problem is, and really even who to get involved in the problem. But you also now
have a tool that isn't going to be used just by you. Essentially, we want the development teams to use this tool, right? So to do that, we have to understand, why did we collect it? How do we collect more? What does the information mean? Don't have to understand development and coding, but I do have to understand the template I created. I have to understand why it collected it. And when they said, that's cool, I want more, I have to understand why we're not going to get more or why we are going to get more, right? How do we go about getting it? So to do that, you're really going to end up going through this diagnostics phase probably several times as you're learning and going through the process of the application. Like I said, all applications aren't considered equal. So here, for an example, got an alert on that shopping cart page that failed. I need to look at this and decide, what am I going to do with it if I didn't know already? So I'm going to go into the knowledge. I'm actually going to go into the alert. And let's look at one of the events that created this. All right, so we'll dive right into, where did this event come from? Give it a second to switch over. So here is the App Diagnostics Console, which gets installed with Operations Manager and is the other method in which developers would use to see those events that are being created, that are logged, that say that the problems are there. My mouse seems to be running out of battery and not clicking when I want it to. So now when you get these events and these details and you drill into them, here's that shopping cart error message, then we can say, what is really going on with the systems? Is this something else that possibly caused this? So an application failure could be a number of things. Somebody unplugs SQL or SQL's not available, turns it off. Application's going to throw an exception. It's going to look similar to this, right? So I need to know what it is. We'll actually categorize these as part of that triaging stage and tell you that this is a connectivity problem right off of the bat. So you're already aware that maybe even though it looks like a developer problem, connectivity problems really aren't theirs, not in all cases. So you'll be able to go right to the SQL team and have them get the instance back up and running. This particular scenario, we can see that it's an application failure. I want to know what the impact of the systems were at that moment in time. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. Good question. So if you look at the detail of what's collected, when an exception in the .NET code happens, we capture the stack trace. Usually developers are already capturing that stack trace, logging it to themselves, or doing something with it. When they're handling the error, we're also collecting it. But what we're doing is we're kind of stripping it down and making it meaningful. So without that, you're only going to see what really happened or what we really care about in the stack. Is everybody familiar with what the stack trace is in an application error? Because you'll start seeing a lot of them because everything's switching to .NET. Stack trace is what's instantiated in the application's memory, so to speak, kind of, right? How did they build it? Yes. Good question. So the question was, how does this application called Application Diagnostics relate to System Center? It's part of System Center. So it's a web console when you install System Center Operations Manager. This gets installed when you check the box Web Consoles.
That's new for 2012.
This is why you should care about application management, because this is the portal that gets installed that you want to give access to the developers. It's actually two portals. This portal is for each individualized event, and then there's this reporting console, which is related to all of this data getting generated into customized reports or customizable reports so that they can take the data and they can look at it and do something with it.
Sean, everybody's got more than one application, so how do we organize this? So the SharePoint guys, your SharePoint.
Yes. So the question was, how does this get individualized for what people care about? So it's actually a couple of things. It's all based on role-based access, just like we're used to with Operations Manager, but it's also based on the different environments that you care about. If you remember when I went through the template, creating the template in Operations Manager, I was able to actually select how I wanted to tag this template or tag this monitoring. And in this particular case here, for example, I tagged this as Dinner Now in Production, right? So when you go back and you look at that console, back in my app diagnostics, the application name now is Dinner Now Production. They didn't really name it that when they deployed the application. Yeah. So we named it that when we captured the event. So now we can filter on what they care about. So the app diagnostics console is going to be exactly what it states, the diagnostics tool for developers, right? We're going to alert them through Visual Studio. We're going to alert them through emails, notifications, subscriptions, however we want to do it. But for the most part, they're going to be able to come here and see what took place. So unfortunately, that means we now have to train another team on how to use an application that we're going to provide them. So there has to be some knowledge around that. Yes? Yeah, so yes, you can filter and control what people are going to see when they come into the console, right? So, matter of fact, you can see up in the top left-hand side, you can create those groups very easily through the navigation panes. So very quickly, I can select the application group, which is an application slash server, set of servers that I care about.
I was just going to add a comment. There's another option you actually have now in 2012, too. For those that aren't familiar, we have new dashboarding in 2012. So you can bypass all these if you want and go that route and create a custom dashboard that says, I want this group to have access to this Dinner Now dashboard. And you can customize it away and even, you know, publish that into SharePoint.
And the dashboard can get an entry
point for
deeper building? Yes. Yep.
So Chris made a comment about the dashboarding in Operations Manager. Operations Manager is expanding its dashboarding capabilities to present those views. So now you can give those views to business owners, app owners, and you can give them to developers of specific projects. So if you looked at that lifecycle we gave earlier, they've got their sprint lifecycle or their agile lifecycle in development. We can even do monitoring of their development and test servers and let them have a dashboard of what that looks like, because developers don't always interact with the test team is on a daily basis, so maybe we can give them dashboards for those. Got a number of customers doing that now. So like I said a second ago, this is now a new console that we have to be familiar with as an IT pro, because we want our other team members to use this data, right? Because now what Chris talked about was time to deployment. Right? We really want to speed up time to deployment. We really want to make that a better approach and methodology, a repeatable approach. And what I'm talking about is time to resolution. We really want to speed up the time to resolution inside of any kind of challenges we have. That's the goal behind collecting alerts and doing something with them. And to do that, just collecting the data and not spreading the wealth isn't really going to help. We've already gone through that stage of collecting data and not doing much with it. When I was a developer, I put all my error log or all my error messages into the event logs on the systems that I would get complaints from the IT pros about, because I would just keep filling it up and never go look at it until somebody said, hey, the application sucks, and I'd have to go look at it. So we've already gone through that life cycle. What we want to do is we want to share the knowledge, right? Get that information out and about and let everybody get to it and use it. So one of the other things that you can really do with this console, really do from this approach, is also somewhat of an awareness or alerting or severity, right? So I'm not going to have to drill into things to be able to see what kind of challenges and problems I'm having in the application and filtering through. I can very quickly say, how many problems do I have? So I don't have a lot. I'll go back. Out of all my events, there's 1,353 events I collected. Operations manager, we don't want 1,353 alerts, right? Well, we didn't create those that way. We told it based on percentages or based on severity. But if I'm wanting to just know how many problems does that mean in these past 2 weeks, it's only 18. Out of 1,300 problems or 1,300 events, there's only really 18 unique problems they all bubble down to. And what's the most challenging ones? So I can quickly switch over and see that my most challenging ones are performance related, and then there's an exception in my shopping cart. Right, so I can get severity and I can get alerting right through the system in the console. I can get that understanding. Some of the things to be aware of, just to throw this out, since that's the training that you'll be getting and passing on, we don't keep a lot of data here. That's not our goal, to be a historical repository of event logs and data. We don't want people to have to come here and clean it out. We do a pretty good job of that. So if you look at the top two events, it only says 500. Doesn't mean it only happened 500 times. It means that's all I'm keeping right now. I cap it at 500. You might see it go to 501, 502, because it's got to do the cleaning after one comes in. So now if I go to my similar events inside of one of these events, I can see those. If this is a problem happening 500 times a minute, I'm only going to see 1 minute's worth of history for this problem. If it's happening 500 times in a year, I'm going to see a year's worth of history for this problem. Does it really matter? Developer will tell you it does. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't matter. I've been a developer, I know. Because it's the same problem. It's the same problem it was a year ago or however long ago. The other interesting thing is we keep detail inside of one of these events for the last 20. So out of the 500, 480 of them look like this when you click on them. An interesting point, because if it's happening 500 times a minute, you send a notification to the developer. He's probably got an old notification now. You're probably only telling him once. To be honest with you, I'd probably tell him every one, but that's just me. So now he gets this link, right? And you're the first guy he's calling. Hey, why can't I see anything? Well, we do tell him, click on it, and it'll give you the detail of a more recent one. And that's when you start the conversation. Well, I want it for all of them. They're not going to pay for the storage, but they still want it. So this is some of the things that you'll go through as you implement and start running and start using. These are the questions that are going to come up, I know, because it's been 5 years worth of doing this. And those are some of the top questions that come up. How do we do historical reporting and analysis? So another great way of alerting and triaging is to automate and generate reports on a regular basis and have them automatically emailed or sent to somebody every Monday for the previous week's worth of work, right? So take the application development team responsible for the production, create a report that looks at a year's or a week's worth of history, or a year maybe, and take that data, generate the report, and email it to them every week, every month. And then they can see, here's a great report on an application status, as it's called. This is, again, another console that's deployed when you deploy Operations Manager, and you check the box for install consoles, web consoles. So here we're simply looking at the two pieces that are part of this application, one web UI and one middle tier that's talking to a database. And we're looking at how many events have been collected, and we're comparing a day in this particular scenario and looking at 1 week's worth of data to make that comparison. So I'm able to see, am I getting more events today than I was yesterday? Or I'm able to see, am I getting more events today than I am on average days? And I'm able to take, is that because of the number of requests are up? The application's usage is up? What's the average response time over time? And I'm able to look at some additional resources that I may care about. So maybe I want the report too. What's CPU utilization look like? Right? How much CPU is the application using versus the systems that the application's sitting on? How much memory is it using? Are we starting to surpass capacity? Are we starting to get to a certain point where we need to change what the systems are running on and the resources that they're using? So these reports kind of go hand in hand with how you want to look at it, right? What I mean is, every single one of these reports, when I take them into to clients and I show their data related with it, and you'll see this when you do it, and you start passing these reports out, everybody sees something different. It's probably no different than any challenge we experience and we're trying to get together as a team, and everybody has different knowledge bases to base their solutions on. Well, that's what we're doing when we look at these reports. We get together and we look at them slightly different. Everybody has something valuable to offer usually. Any DBAs in the audience? Good, I can pick on them slightly. They never come to those meetings, that's why. But in general, saving this is a favorite now, something easily done in the console, something that I can take this information and have it emailed, generated, and sent off. Everybody's now having those same conversations about what took place last week, right? So now that's my alerting mechanism. I'm alerting everybody of the challenges that took place the week before, maybe without even going into my operations management console. Does that make sense to everybody? So I think, really, what I wanted to make sure that I did, and I hope I did, was to just simply highlight some of the things that you'll do day-to-day with Operations Manager and Application Management, but in particular with monitoring the applications, but some of the things that you'll care about as you go through, right? So we care about how we're going to get alerted. I'm not going to get too many alerts. How we're going to create the data collection. I'm going to need to pass the data on so they can solve it quickly, right? And what are the different pieces and parts of the tools that now play into that, and how I'm going to train other users of this. Make sense? So we'll give everybody, looks like we've got about 10 or 12 minutes time for some questions and answers. The only thing I do ask is that you step up and use the mics just so that we can make sure that we get them recorded. Thank you very much.
What I don't see up there, is there a service level report that we can send to the app dev team? One that's really actionable, says, you know, maybe the performance on the app server's degrading as a total. You know, here's a Pareto of the really worst aborting transactions.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have enough. That's a good question. So the number of reports, and you can see up here in the left-hand column, they're basically somewhat unlimited, right? Because you can take this and expand it to whatever your desires are. But essentially, you have reports that say, here are all the applications you're monitoring, here's all the events that are coming in, the more severe ones, and even down for a developer, down to the assemblies they wrote or didn't write, they might have bought, that are having those problems, right? Okay. And they link all the way back, they can click the link and go all the way back into the event that made up that report.
Yep. One of the things I would recommend for anyone that actually goes back and deploys this technology is there's a report in here, problem distribution analysis report, that really gets at the question. It's also one of these things, if you want the quick win, right? You get this up and running, 2 days later you run this report, and even though that may be 2 days worth of problems, it's going to be a representative sample of the key issues that you're experiencing right there. So that's probably the one you want to go after right after you get it up and running to understand. For example, it'll stack rank applications. So we use this internally at Xbox Live. And they monitor about 20 applications, and it's interesting, you look at a sample report, and the first five applications on the list represent 50% of the problems in the infrastructure. So that's the kind of stuff you can get really quickly.
That's great. Thanks.
So this application advisor report screen, is that only available then for like the .NET applications you define and monitor? Like, is it tied into your .NET authoring?
The app, yeah, the app diagnostics console and the app advisor console that you see now are part of the APM management pack, which comes with Operations Manager, and that is .NET specific.
You can't tie anything like that to the J2EE.
So Operations Manager has the J2EE management pack. The data, and I haven't gone into it recently, the data can probably bubble up and you can customize reports for that.
Right.
You can certainly create dashboards that incorporate them both.
Right.
That is certainly doable.
But it's not part of the template thing.
It doesn't have its own reporting console yet.
Okay.
That's what AvaCode is, and what you guys have in J2EE is a BeanSpy servlet that is pulling off JMX and basically giving availability reports.
Right. Yep.
And we're looking where the source is, right, so that people understand what kind of reports are being made.
That's exactly it, because the source of the data that's coming in is separate. Source of the data actually goes into the Operations Manager database slightly differently, too. But the data is still accessible and still can bubble up into the dashboards and into custom reports. Yeah, that's exactly right. Because it's slightly different for J2EE applications, by the way. It's a different depth, let's say. Yeah. Any other questions? No. Great, thanks.
Great, thanks everyone.